Hi, friend. It's Brittany Moses.
And Ranella Kalagithi.
And you're listening to Speaking Our Minds, the podcast that brings you honest and nuanced conversations around mental health, holistic wellness, and the real complexities of what it means to be human in the challenges of today's world, where we have fun, fascinating, and meaningful discussions around how to live a more insightful, connected, and whole life from the inside out, joined by guest professionals, thought leaders, and some of my friends and those with lived experience. As always, we ask that you keep in mind that the views and opinions shared here are respectively held by each individual and is not a substitute for professional care or an alternative to seeking personal help from your clinician or provider and is ours to discern. We're so glad you're here. Follow the conversation on Instagram at SpeakingOurMindsPod and sit with us because we're diving in. This podcast episode is brought to you by WeShare by UHSM, a unique healthcare membership on a mission to create holistic wellness for the mind, body, and spirit. I'm honored to partner with UHSM and its community of faithful members. Together, we plan to create more awareness and programs around mental health and the role it plays in our overall balanced health. If you or someone you know is frustrated with their current healthcare, I encourage you to inquire about membership options at www.weshare.org or call 1-800-900-8476.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Speaking Our Minds. Today, it's just me, Ranella, here with an incredible guest that I can't wait to introduce you to. But this month has been all about deconstruction. It's been all about, healing, religious healing, spiritual wounding, faith evolving. This is a topic that I think a lot of people have not been able to talk about for, several decades. And now I'm really grateful that we can just kind of get on a podcast and have these conversations. And if you have not listened to the last few conversations we've had in the month of March, really want to encourage you to listen and go back because we've been interviewing some incredible people. And Brittany and I have had some pretty vulnerable and open conversations. And so no matter where you're at in your journey, this month is for you because hopefully it will also open your heart and mind to the kind of struggles and the ways of thinking that other people may have, as well as maybe be able to answer some of your own questions as well. So welcome to another episode for the month of March on deconstruction. And today I have just one of my favorite people on Instagram that I'm actually meeting for the first time today. Her name is Stephanie Stalvey. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's Stalvey. Like stalling. Like
Wonderful. Yeah. Good to know, Stephanie. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Ranella.
Absolutely. So how I got to meet Stephanie, by the way, Stephanie is an artist. You have to go to Instagram and check out her work. We'll put it in the show notes. But I one of your posts just popped up on my feed one day. And I don't even remember when. I want to say maybe a year or two ago. I mean, I've just been following you. Okay. It feels like forever. But one of her posts, I think maybe someone reposted something that you drew, one of your pieces of art, your comics. And this was before I think you started doing your series on purity culture. But I was just incredibly amazed. Okay. Because not only are you an incredible artist, but the story that you're telling is just, it's so palpable. It's so real. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about your art and what you do and just your background. I know that's really broad, but just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, totally. Thank you so much. That's so nice. So I'm an artist, I'm a painter. It's almost 4 years now that I've kind of been doing this niche thing where I'm making autobiographical comics, which I started them kind of just as like a, something that I did for myself as kind of like a way of like processing my experiences and like making sense of the world. It was almost like intuitive journaling, but doing this thing that I had really done since I was a little kid, which is like make these comics.
I love that.
But you know, I decided to start sharing them, and it was incredible how, you know, there was just this space of people who were able to say that they had these, you know, similar experiences, growing up inside the American Evangelical Church, which was one of the things that I was really beginning to unpack. So it was like 2020, I had like a 6 month old and it was wow. Pandemic,
wow.
You know, becoming a mother, it brings up all this stuff, like this kind of, it rouses that kind of implicit memory of your own childhood. And I just started saying like, what were the things that I heard and absorbed when I was little like this, when I was so impressionable and all of these things were kind of like developing. And what's the inheritance of that? And how do I want to maybe like do things differently or change for the sake of my child, but also for the sake of this child that I can still kind of feel within me?
Wow.
You know, that just like sounds really heavy, but I was like, I want to make comics. I want to make comics. So it's kind of like evolved. And like you said, I'm kind of focusing a bit more in on some like long form storytelling that I can do around purity culture, which I think if purity culture is related to everything else that's,
right,
you know, kind of like in the mix, I think that it's about so much more than sex. I think it's about, you know, control and our relationship to our bodies and our relationship to ourselves and autonomy. And yeah, I just think it's connected to everything. And it's been a really interesting topic to kind of play with.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's so interesting.
And the story is kind of like about when I was like in my early teens, like when I was early 20s, not early teens. And I was, you know, first I was in college and I'm kind of getting to know this boy, falling in love, the man who eventually becomes my husband, but kind of like how purity culture was showing up then. But then the story that I'm making, it's also kind of like flips back and forth in time to like a more present day type of thing.
Right.
And it's going to be compiled into a graphic memoir that's supposed to come out in early 26.
Wow.
So that's what I'm working
on. That's exciting. And I will tell you, I'm just like hooked every time your comics come out. I mean, it's just like, I'm not like a comic girl or whatever, but I mean, it's and they've never been topics that I'm that interested in. And every time yours come up, I'm ooh, the next part of the story, let's swipe through. And, and they're just so riveting because, you're truly such a storyteller and, obviously very vulnerable because you're sharing your own story with you and your husband, which of course connects to people so much. Like that's kind of the, I guess, price that you pay as a storyteller. But the product or the result is that like people really connect with a personal story. And, and you, first of all, I mean, there's just so many things you just said that I want to unpack, but obviously 2020 was just a big year and it kind of felt like a weirdly revolutionizing, pivotal year for so many people because the world just stopped. And for especially Western Americans, that is like unheard of. And when you stop and actually start feeling and start thinking and start reflecting, and for you having a little 6 month old, I mean, everyone had their own, I've talked to so many different people and even for myself, but had their own kind of different types of, you know, mini revelations or even crises or just starting to kind of second guess so many things because, and I don't think it is a coincidence, you know, like the world stopped. There were such huge things happening in the world, in culture, in the news, in politics. And it really does make you stop, think about your life. And I just love that that's kind of when the turn happened for you most recently to start asking yourself some of these deeper questions and also start sharing. But you've obviously been talking about purity culture, and I'm wondering if maybe you can unpack the idea of purity culture. For some people, it might be new, or there's just so many different versions, but what has been your experience and understanding of what purity culture even is?
Yeah, that is such a good question. So when I think about purity culture, like you said, there's like a few layers to it, because there's the layer that is very much like connected to the specific kind of movement in the 80s and 90s, really, within the subsect of American fundamentalist evangelical Christianity.
Right.
So it's like after the homogenization of, Protestants kind of in the 70s, with, you know, the formation of the moral majority and this kind of political movement. It's this this movement that was like very, very focused on the youth and promoting abstinence only sex education, and waiting until marriage to have sex, and in some cases like all the way to like kissing and holding hands.
Yeah,
right. There were
right.
some like very extreme versions of this. But it was, there was all these things that went with it, like, you know, pledging your virginity, almost like I think of it almost like, you know, the DARE programs, where it's like, promise
right.
to never try drugs, like promise, promise to never do anything.
Right.
Like, but it was so everywhere. You know, we had like these rings, some people had ceremonies about it.
Yeah. Wow.
And at the heart, it was like really kind of like you're internalizing a couple of messages. I think you're internalizing the message that sex is dirty, save it for your husband, you know, sex is this thing that is very it's very dangerous, bad, shameful,
right.
And don't touch it, don't go there. And also it's not just that sex, it's this part of yourself is very, very dangerous, right? So it's hard, because to me it presented itself, the message that we got presented itself as kind of like, this is the alternative to quote unquote the world. That's what, you know, mainstream culture is what we call like the world, to their kind of sexual ethic,
right?
Which is, you know, just basically presented to you as like straight licentiousness.
It's right,
just,
right. It's like, know, all that. Or nothing.
There was also, yeah, exactly. There was something about that though that resonated with me, because, you know, when you exist as a young girl, you do pick up on the fact that we have a mainstream rape culture that is predatory and misogynistic and demeaning to women. And so if you're provided something and saying, well, this is the alternative, this is how sex can be holy, this is how sex can be protected.
Right.
It made sense to me. Okay, let's take it seriously. Let's do that. What was so confusing, and what made it so hard to make my way out of it, was realizing that purity culture wasn't actually an alternative to the mainstream at all. It was reinforcing all of the kind of puritanical patriarchal paradigms that are really old and really human, and that inform the mainstream rape culture. The idea that a woman's body isn't her own, that it's property whose value can kind of be diminished through use. The idea that people have the right to like impose their religious like control over somebody else, like the imposition of control over another human being is the problem, right?
Right.
In both scenarios. And so I think the opposite of purity culture would just be, you know, recognizing and integrating the erotic part of our humanity as like something that we see as sacred and belonging to the human being in front of us, right?
Yeah,
And that our bodies are our own. So
I love
yeah,
that.
that's kind of how I think about it.
I love that. And thank you for kind of expanding on purity culture, because it did kind of have its beginnings for a certain reason. And like you said, and I'm glad you kind of shared the perspective, because it was very appealing. You know, I grew up also in kind of that, actually in my nuclear family, my immediate family, that wasn't really emphasized as much, even though I come from like an Indian Asian family. My dad was a pastor, by the way. I know we know nothing about each other, so we're just like getting to know each other here. But yeah,
girl,
my dad was a
pastor's kid.
Yeah, pastor's kid.
High five.
Yeah, and you know what?
Yeah, girl.
I'm really grateful. Like I had, it was three daughters, and my dad was, you know, pretty good at kind of shielding us, but also empowering us. But for me, actually, when I moved to California, because we lived in Ohio, moved out to California, and there were.
Oh, you lived in, wait, you lived in Ohio?
I did. Did you live there?
I grew up in.
Shut up! Where?
My dad is a pastor. There were three of us girls and we lived in Ohio. Oh, this is so weird. Go on.
I'm dead. This is crazy. What? Where are you in the lineup?
That's amazing. I'm so sorry that I like interrupted you, but that's too weird. No, I am the firstborn.
Okay, so I'm the middle. I'm the middle child. I love that so freaking much.
Great.
That's so great. Wow. So yeah, we'll definitely have to talk more after this. And then yeah, so 2001, we moved out to California, and you would think, you know, it's like more progressive in California than Ohio. But the interesting thing is that I was around a few years later in high school, when I was around 15. My parents were going through a split up. I was very vulnerable, and I was also very conscientious, and I also didn't quite fit in. There were all these different factors that made me very perfectionistic. I was always very high achieving, wanted to be kind of like on the straight and narrow all the time, because that was very safe for me. And that's where I kind of got my identity. That's where I fit in, was doing well at anything that I did. And when it came to religion, I was kind of introduced to this type of community that was actually very different from my immediate family and the way I was raised. It was a group of people who, of course, you know, individually, as individuals and humans, I love and adore, but from the kind of context that they were from, this was the type of group that was very conscientious, very perfectionistic, very filled with kind of fear about salvation, and also the idea that young people were the next generation to bring, you know, like wholeness and purity and holiness back to the world, so Jesus could come again. And I was kind of the token brown female that had the big smile and the passionate energy. I mean, I look back on my Facebook posts from those times and I'm like, dear God, help me. But you know, but you look back on
just don't look at the Facebook.
Exactly. Like you look back on your younger self and you're just like, well, I was passionate, I was fervent, and this was kind of a group that really emphasized purity and even kissing. You know, my first boyfriend and I did not hold hands ever. And once, like, I tried to, I remember once I like put my hand on his back and he was like, oh, he kind of like made this gesture. And because I was also in that mindset, instead of, you know, now I would be like, what is your problem? Back then I was like, oh, I'm causing him to stumble. So that is, that's definitely like, come from kind of a similar place, but like, especially as women, I think that purity culture and this idea of purity, the onus gets placed on the woman. And I think that's what you were talking about, is like, this wasn't a great substitute or a better alternative to like the quote unquote licentious, you know, just free for all sexuality of the world. This was just a different version of it. And I think the common denominator, maybe you would say, is that it's still placing the pressure on women to be responsible for men's thoughts, feelings, actions, behaviors.
Yes. Absolutely. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I know that I don't, there's just a couple of things. Like, I just feel so much love for the little girl that you were back then, like making those cringy Facebook posts. Like, there's for me, there's such a balance between like, yes, we laugh about it. You have to laugh about it, but I have so much tenderness in my heart
Yes.
for these children that were trying so hard to do what they were told was the only right way to be, even if that meant completely surrendering their access to themselves on the most basic level. And I'm still like, I'm talking to that girl and I'm having to remind her that, like, I'm so proud of you. You've done a good job. You don't have to do this. Like, you don't have to sacrifice yourself for the, because other people told you to.
Right.
You are already good.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so much, and there's so many different like directions that you can go
Yeah.
with it, like, because it permeates so deep.
Yeah.
I mean, you said something about, oh, I know, like being responsible for the men,
Right.
right? I think we all kind of like have probably like those core memories of shame where it's like, I don't know, like I have these memories of like being in a Bible study or something, and an adult man like saying like, "Hey, the way that you're dressed is really distracting," and then you immediately feel this like wave of just shame and humiliation. You feel
Wow.
so small. You feel so dirty. But it's like this was an adult man looking
Right.
at a child and sexualizing her, and he
Yeah.
couldn't control it. And that's the thing too, is that it's telling men, it's like affirming this lie that like, well, you're just a monster who's, animalistic, and of course you would want to take advantage of a woman if you could, so
Right.
just battle that. It's like,
Exactly.
no, men are humans and they're capable of better.
Yeah, exactly. And even looking at it kind of from their perspective at that time, again, not giving anyone the like justification or a free pass or whatever, but actually, patriarchy really does affect both men and women. And for the narrative that is shared with men, especially back then and even still now, it's that they do have the power and they do have the right to speak up, and they should say something because they're protecting, themselves, and they're also protecting women, and that's their role. And that was kind of given to them. So I was surrounded by a lot of men growing up who felt very entitled to share their opinions. First of all, because men, whether you're in the church or not, men are given that kind of that license. But especially if you're in the church, called to be quote unquote like the leader of the home, the leader of the church, the leader of whatever. I just grew up with so many men that gave their opinions about how I should dress, or I remember also, then there's the side of being a woman who is also totally bought into purity culture, whether our body agrees with it or not. It's a sense of protection. We have to buy into it because the ramifications of not buying into it are obviously that we're, Jezebels, or that we're, or whatever. So being a woman that had to buy into it back then, I remember once getting an email from the leader of our group, which makes it sounds very, very culty. But anyway, he was kind of like the director of our kind of ministry. And I got an email from his wife, and his wife, we had all been at their house the night before, on a Friday evening, kind of having worship. So we were singing, having Bible studies, and it was just a chill time. I was a what in my world we called a Bible worker, so I would train people how to like give Bible studies and all of that, and I was kind of training them. And so we would go over and we'd have these worships with all the leaders. And anyway, there were girls and there were guys, and I got this email saying that one of the girls that I was, overseeing, that she was sitting on the floor. She was wearing jeans, but like her legs were like wide open. And that next time, please tell her to sit more ladylike, because
Oh my God.
Her husband had told her that one of the guys had told him that it bothered him.
My God.
So as a and I'm giving this perspective because again, when you're in that
Yeah.
world, even as a woman, there's so many women that buy into it because they have to, and I was one of those women. I went ahead and forwarded that email to all the women and said, you know, ladies, we really need, you know, so, and it's just, it hurts my own
Yes.
heart, but at
Yes.
the same time, it's like you're just, there's nothing else that you can do. You're in that mindset. And in many
Right.
ways, I also kind of continued that mindset, in that world, but yeah, totally just said, like, we really need to be more careful when we're around the guys and just kind of having years and years of that type of mentality. People telling you from all different sides. I don't know. I mean, I remember there were, I've thought a woman could walk into church and she could, wear a little shorter skirt or wear some heels or wear some makeup. She could almost do
Yeah.
anything. She could wear her hair in a certain way. She could act a certain way. And that would be taken as she's changing. Maybe she's less spiritual. Maybe she's becoming a little bit more, a little bit more risque and just a little more whatever. A guy could walk in and there's almost nothing he could
Yeah.
do. Like he could drive in with a
Yeah, that's
Ferrari.
so true.
He could come in and get a new pair of shoes or a really snazzy suit or cut his hair differently. There's almost nothing you could see from the outside that society is conditioned to look at him and judge something about even his
And
spiritual
it's
life.
impossible for a woman to not. Yeah, it's impossible for a woman to not be judged. She's wearing jeans, she's completely covered up. Her body just literally exists, and that's her
Right.
crime, right?
Exactly.
So, oh my God, it's absolutely true. There's just so much going on in my head right now. But like you said, the messaging that was for both men and women was like, if a man notices the eroticism or the sexuality of a woman, if he's at all like even aware of or attracted to her or whatever, then that automatically means that he is sexualizing her, and to sexualize her automatically means he's dehumanizing her and turning her into an object. But why is that so? Why can he not just say, like, oh, look, a fellow sexual human being? And, why does this have to turn into objectification unless we don't have any other paradigm for human sexuality than to use each other and abuse each other? Why is it inherently dehumanizing to notice this part of her humanity? You can notice it and say, oh, that belongs to her. I don't have the right to take it. She's beautiful. You could even see this part of her and recognize it as a sacred and holy part of her. If she is sexy, her erotic power is also part of her sacred image of God, and it belongs to her, and you don't have the right to impose how it shows up. And you're responsible for whatever's going on in your mind when you're around other human beings. I was very aware of this too at the time when I was breastfeeding, right? I was like, I won't cover up. I'm feeding my child. Everybody else can figure out within themselves whatever like problems they have connected with a woman feeding her child and feeling like they need to sexualize that. And I think that again, it a lot of things happened when I had a baby. Just realizing that like women, our power is so much in our bodies. And when you can divorce a woman from her body and make her believe that her body is bad and off limits to her, and something that she needs to really cut off access from, you're dividing her from her power. You're dividing her from herself, like in a really deep and profound way. And it takes a long time to try to kind of get back into the body. And for us, we were taught kind of like explicitly that there is this split between the flesh and the spirit. And the flesh is carnal and animalistic and bad and dangerous. And it's an impediment to the more holy, detached, disembodied mind and spirit. And I just think that this, it's so false, first of all. It's like, I mean, I think about it on the, all these levels. I think about how like the earthiness of spirituality was really, is a really feminine thing, right? Like the fact that our bodies like create life.
Yeah.
That is an inherently God-like kind of thing, but it's a real earthy flesh and blood thing.
Right.
And all of that kind of gets demoted in favor of this, like I said, this disembodied kind of conceptual male God in the sky. That's what's more important. And it's ironic because like, as I've come all the way around, I start going, well, wait, wasn't it always a story about incarnation? Like, wasn't it always a story about that, like, divinity exists in this visceral, real, physical body?
Right.
And so it's so interesting to like feel permission to come back around and like look at these things in a completely different lens now.
I love that. Yeah. I love that so much, because I think that's one of the things that stood out to me so much about your art when I, you know, first found you on Instagram, was I felt like you put a visual as well as the words to something that I had always kind of felt deep within me. And, you know, the history of women is just so interesting because, you know, like if you look at history in general through the lens of power, especially in our world and in the Western world, women have not been in that position of power, and that shapes everything. It shapes how we view ourselves. It shapes how we view God. It shapes how we, you know, view our worth. And, you know, and especially within the church, it shapes our role and how we feel about ourselves. And so of course we grow up feeling and believing, that God, even though the Bible clearly says that God made man in his image, male and female, he created them in his image.
Yeah.
So obviously the idea of God as a he or God as a man, can't truly just be that. And I think that that really opened up something that I felt deep down at my core. And that is that as a woman, you know, God has always felt like in a similar position to the way that I felt like I had to relate with men in my life, which is I'm earning something. I have to prove something. I have to, you know, do something in order to be accepted, to be valued, and all of that. When you look at women and when you look at how we relate to one another and our image of God that we reflect in who we are very naturally forward facing and relational. And, you know, we are the mothers, we're the ones where it's like, it doesn't matter what the heck the child ever does. You're that's your child. You're going to protect it. Like, you know, like with your life. And, and there's this kind of like part of God that I couldn't understand until I removed myself from the idea of, all the power belonging to a man or to a male God or to, you know, or to even the church. And so as a woman, and I see, you know, some of your paintings in the background there, I just thought that was such a beautiful portrayal of God. And, you know, that part where you wrote, you know, like, this is my body broken for you. And just how beautiful it is that if there was anyone that could understand the experience of a woman, it was, you know, the representation of God on earth, Jesus breaking his body. And so I just thought that was so incredibly beautiful. And I guess my question is like, what are some of those narratives that women have to continue to undo in order to have a strong relationship with their body, especially in the context of growing up in the church?
Oh, man. That, first of all, that's so nice. And second, that's That's such a good question. There's so many. And it's such a slow process, like, 'cause you start the work and then you continue to like uncover more and more. But I think a lot about like the erotic as, like I was saying, something more than sex.
Yes.
Esther Perel, do you know her work?
Yeah, I
Yeah,
love
I
what she
love
does.
her. I love her. And she talks about kind of like the erotic energy as like a quality of vitality and aliveness, just sensuality as far as like your actual senses, like touch and play and curiosity and delight and kind of like being connected to the world in this sensorial embodied way. And kind of relating to it with this kind of play and delight. I think that for me, that's been a big part of my healing, right? It's not just going back and like rehashing all of these like really painful things, but it's also allowing my body to feel all this pleasure.
Wow.
And I think that like it's like you were saying, we kind of learned to fear our bodies, our desires, our flesh. And so for me, I went through a very confusing time, like in my early 20s, right after I was married, because of course I was married very young, where I was still kind of like afraid to encounter myself fully. And
Yeah.
so I really tried to not let out this one part of me that I had been told if it gets out, it's just bad. It's just going, you're going to want the wrong thing. You're going to do something destructive. You're going to hurt yourself or other people. But when I finally was like, I'm not scared to face anything inside of me. I think that I can look at
Wow.
it with compassion. I think that it's not going to overtake me. And like once I met these parts of myself that I was so scared of for so long, they were incredible, and they weren't these things that I was afraid of. Like they were just these deeply good and valuable and beautiful parts of myself that I now get to be in touch with.
Wow.
And so like in the comic, I'm trying to like go back almost and like relive and refeel how sweet and sincere and genuine and pure the love that I was experiencing was, and that I sh that it should have been, right?
Right.
Because I couldn't feel it. Like I felt the love for this man, and I felt desire in my body, but there was this kind of connection that was built between feeling too much pleasure and then feeling like immense destabilizing like sickness, and I would break
Yeah.
out in hives and I would throw up because there's terror at the root of it.
Right.
There's all of these threats that again live in your body about how you're bad and now you're going to be worthless and now you ought to be punished and you deserve hell. You deserve all of these things. I mean, it's all kind of written into your body. So yeah, I wanted to go back with the comic and again, not have it all be so heavy. I want to show how hard it was while also saying like, this was actually really sweet and wonderful and
Yes.
beautiful.
I love that. That's
Yeah.
beautiful. And I love that because you've said it a few different times, and I think that's really important for anyone that's on this journey is just the idea of kind of going back and reframing the story. Because sometimes the way that we experienced it with all the rush of shame and all the feelings and then as we look back how we feel about ourselves, all of those things are just one way to look at our past experiences. And sometimes if we're really hard on ourselves, we'll look back and all we'll see is regret and brokenness and shame. And that can build up a lot of anger and hatred and bitterness, which has its place at certain stages of the healing process. But I think the way that you are able and trying and continuing to look at yourself with self-compassion, the past versions of yourself with almost a like motherly, love and
Yeah.
like an older sister kind of perspective and just more nuance, because I think that's part of what creates, I think that's part of what makes those of us who kind of land in that mindset susceptible to it is sort of this black and white way of thinking. And it's actually the
Yes,
black and white
absolutely.
way of thinking that is primarily the problem. And the issue is that we might kind of start gaining perspective on our lives, but then we take that black and white thinking with us still. And so we look back and we're like, well, that was all bad. And that thinking is actually
That's so insightful.
it's the place that needs healing because we are so much more than this, black and white dualistic, just like all or nothing person. We are a mosaic, like
Oh,
even
yeah.
in the perspective
That's so good.
of who we are in the past, it's like I can look back at who I was, and yes, I'm gonna feel a little bit of the cringe, actually a lot of bit of it. I'm gonna feel the ick. I'm gonna feel like, what was I thinking?
Fine.
Exactly. But also being able to cultivate the more nuanced gray spaces and parts of ourselves that can look back and be like, oh, look at her. She was in love. Like, look at her. She was just a human. She had those hormones rushing through her. Oh, look at them, like, kissing and making out and doing things that teenagers and young people do because they felt a connection, a very human connection. And just being able to have that nuance, is just so beautiful.
My God, yeah, that's really good. I think I heard you guys on an earlier podcast talking about how like black and white thinking is developmentally appropriate when you're young, right? But then like there's this inability sometimes to like move on from that. And it's almost like this stubborn desire to like stay in a more juvenile state, like a refusal to enter into maturation. And I definitely see that, but like things like adult human sexuality require you to like have a nuanced, non-judgmental perspective on things. Like a big thing for me now is just like non-judgmental, like morally neutral noticing. That's a big thing for me because like, we were taught take every thought captive. It was like every potential like desire or lust or thought, it, like within your own private mind, is also like under the surveillance of God. And it's something that you have to immediately say, was that an evil thought or a righteous thought? And for humans, it's that makes it so much harder. Like that thought just then is like, well, no, I do want to be seen. If I can just go, oh, that's just a normal thought that humans have. Now I can move on. You know what I mean?
Like,
You just
that's interesting.
notice yourself with neutrality and compassion and realize that like it's okay. The things that we were taught often to feel so much guilt about were like just normal human stuff.
And I'm really glad that you brought that up because now kind of being in the mental health space and going through my program and working with individuals, I think it's just, really interesting how much power spiritual and religious leaders have, how much power authorities in the Christian world have. But they are not tempered or balanced with an understanding of how humans actually function and change.
That's so good.
So it ends
So
up
good.
being, very actually detrimental to the people sitting in the pews. And I kind of sit there, when I do go to church from time to time, and it is very difficult sometimes to hear what's being said. And I typically go to churches that I feel most safe at. But even there are things that are said that you start realizing, wow, no wonder the brain chemistry of people who grew up, people like you and I who grew up in these worlds, how it really changes your identity and it shifts how you feel about yourself. And again, coming back to being a woman and the narratives that are told to us over and over again, it's very difficult to begin feeling empowered as a woman and yet feel confident about that. Because
yes,
not only in the church, but also in society, when a woman becomes empowered, and you know, let's just walk the listeners through this. When a woman becomes more empowered in herself, she has more autonomy. She has more freedom to choose for herself. But the things that she would choose for herself, because she is a woman that is created to take up space and to be beautiful and to feel beautiful, to feel confident, to feel sexy, to you feel confident with the opposite sex, all of those things have been correlated with the idea of a woman that's a Jezebel, someone that's out to tempt men, who is making it hard for men. Don't you want to protect them? Why would you tempt them in that way? And so you hit on this earlier, which I would love to kind of talk a little bit more about, which is this idea that on both sides, both men and women and everyone in between, there needs to be a shift of how you view women, because there is a responsibility for women to know themselves, love themselves, be empowered, be confident in themselves, but they're going to also have to shut their ears to and eyes to the messages coming from them subconsciously and, you know, overtly or subtly from the way men view them, which is, you are responsible for my sex drive and everything that happens. So, so maybe like, could you speak to, you know, you shared a little bit this earlier, but like speak to the nuance of how men could possibly view women in a more healthy way and how women could view their own sexuality in a healthy way. And I would love to just kind of like lay that out and kind of get another option for people versus you're either like sexy, licentious, trying to get out there and get, you know, or you're completely covered up and you're so good to men and you're, you know, protecting them. Like, let's look at some of that middle ground.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Yeah. I think, for both men and women, I think it needs to be, I get excited when I think about women believing that, like, not only are they entitled to pleasure, but that their pleasure is holy, that it is sacred. I really feel that way now. And I feel like my experiences of intimacy with my husband are like, they're sacred experiences for me. Because it is this kind of, I don't know, it's the integration of the flesh and the spirit. What you're talking about, like what it brings to mind is just, Freud's Madonna whore complex, which originally was just his, like, it was a complex in men. Who, like, I don't know, you can say better than me, but like associated their mother, I guess, with their wives, right? So like women could only be one of these two things. They could be respectable, saintly and virtuous, and that's the Madonna. Or if they have any sexuality at all, their sexuality kind of like corrupts their virtue, and they can be degraded and used, and they can only be seen as a whore, right? And an entire woman could not fit in the mind of these men. But that was a complex, like that was, these people had like a problem in their brain. But I'm like, that applies basically just to the culture, right? Is that we need to expand our capacity to see women as entire beings.
Right.
And when we see a woman's body, not just to go to, there's a, you know, an object that can belong to me, but like, I've really connected with like going back to like prehistoric human, like carvings and paintings of God, which were, you know, sculptures of women giving birth and sculptures of vulvas giving birth and of, you know, pregnant figures. And I'm like, this is sacred. There's nothing about this that exists for a man to, like, you know, feel like he's standing in reverence of it. And I think standing in reverence of one another is a beautiful thing, whether we're, you know, men looking at women or women looking at men. Like, we are not one another's prey. We can have this kind of, like, beautiful and playful, but, like, deeply respectful way that we see first and foremost the sacred humanity in one another.
Right.
You know? And I think that it's a thing that's easier said than done, but, like, I have a son, and that's what I want to kind of instill in him, that everybody else is as human as you are. And, like, I want to treat him with the kind of, like, deep respect and dignity that I hope that he treats other people with. And, you know, to try to just navigate away from this, like, deeply harmful, like you said, patriarchy is deeply harmful to men too. This idea that, like, conquest is the only way that you can relate to other people is, like, so lonely and isolating, and it cuts men off from their own ability to just, like, feel and connect, and cuts them off from access to their own healing. So I love these kind of conversations, because I just believe that deep down we're all so much better than we have believed. And I think that there's this core goodness that is within us, and that's what makes me believe it's possible.
That we can
get there together, and we can kind of have patience and empathy with ourselves and each other as we do.
Absolutely. And I love that. I love that you say, you know, getting there together, because, you know, as someone who is a self-proclaimed feminist, I think that it took me a while to be okay with saying that, because of all of the stigma that comes with it and all the various colors of feminism that there are. But I am a feminist who also really wants to see from the perspective of men and see the effect of patriarchy on both sides, because I think it's easy in any case where you are trying to bring someone freedom, it's easy to find someone who is the main perpetrator and to say you're the evil one. Again, that black and white thinking of you brought this upon us, you're the one, you know, if you were all gone or if everything was, you know, then it would be great. And that's just, again, that's very black and white thinking. That's very much like, hey, I, you know, in order for me to exist and exist well in my best self, you can't. And that's not what we're going for. But at the end of the day, being able to move forward together with people of all genders is so important, because it's a collective understanding that we are all coming to. And so one of my clients just told me that she and her boyfriend have been listening to the podcast this month. And so I'm always just very aware of the fact that, you know, yes, women need to be absolutely empowered and strengthened, and you know, their narratives shifted, and they need to know that they are so much more than what society has told them. But the same is true for men. Actually, that the kind of the educational part, we are all skill building. We're all learning these skills. And one of those skills is something that I think for men is really difficult, because it's, like, not been modeled at all.
Yeah.
Hardly, you know, when you look at, it's very hard for me actually to, I'm not a rom-com gal in general, but it's really hard for me to watch rom-coms from, like, the 90s, even though those are the classics for us, because of how they treat women. And if you can imagine being a man growing up in a society where you are told that this is how women are, this is how you view women, and all of these things, you see it in the movies, Everywhere you look, of course, this is the result. You know, you hear it in church.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
So I really love that idea that we are all working together, because I think that's how we heal, is we heal when we are, as women, not willing to, quote unquote, put up with the type of men who will treat us in a certain way. I think women are still learning a lot about how to relate with themselves, and so they put up with a lot. They keep having the conversations with someone that they're dating, or someone they're talking to online, or someone that they've met, and they keep the conversation, they keep the relationship, they keep putting up with it because they think, well, that's how all men are, that's how they have to be, versus, you know, being able to say, hey, actually, you know what, this is where I draw the line. This is the type of guy that I'm looking for. I am looking for someone who has these qualities and who also treats women in this sort of way. When we start kind of raising the bar and drawing the line, that's also when men are able to understand, like, oh, things are shifting. I can't treat women this way. They won't put up with it. And then on the other
100%.
Hand, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. And then on the other hand, you know, helping men to feel safe enough to have these conversations with women too.
Well, I think what you said about drawing the boundary is having a high view of men, because you're saying, okay, like, I don't need to engage with this because I know that men are capable of better than this. So I'm not going to settle for the idea that all men are animals because I know that they are not. And I know that you're all capable of something else. And I think that's the thing, is like, purity culture has such a low view of men. And we don't have to participate in that. And again, like, absolutely, I say, like, draw the boundaries. You need to believe fully that, like, you have permission to inhabit yourself, to own your body, to live your life, to feel your feelings, to explore these things the way that feels, you know, authentic and good and true and in alignment with yourself. And you don't need to, like, submit that or give that up to men, and you don't have to listen to it. You can cut it off. But at the same time, like you're saying, on this kind of larger scale, you know, I don't believe that demonizing people and flattening people's humanity is helpful either. I don't think punishment is a helpful way forward. I think it just, like, takes whatever, like, wounded parts of a person that were, you know, causing the problem in the first place, and, like, kind of compounds it. So I don't think that shame and punishment and demonizing people is going to be a long-term way out of the problems we find ourselves in. We do have to, like, just remember the humanity of people who are different than us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, that is kind of being able to engage with the conversation in a way where there isn't just a hero and a villain, and you know, being able to see both the hero and the villain within us, and also recognize that that we're all just human, and we're all literal sponges. So many people grow up in families and in you know, situations where what they saw modeled to them was just so completely different than what they're being told as an adult. So that can be very disorienting. And so as you know, if there was a woman that you were talking to, and she is kind of coming out of this mentality that maybe she is, you know, the reason why men stumble, or, you know, she's kind of coming out of purity culture and it's scary and there's a lot of shame. What would you tell her? How would you kind of guide her, advise her in the next, you know, coming season, in the next few years of her kind of growth and development? Like, what would you tell her?
Oh my gosh, that's a really good question. I think part of my instinct, right, is to go straight to, like, the lecture and, like, let me intellectualize this for you. Let me give you the bullet list. Right. But then I'm always kind of pulled back to the fact that, like, all of this lives in our body. Mm. All of this lives in our body. Mm. So I think you have to kind of start there by like tuning in deeply and listening, not to what these men are telling you or not to what you've been told, but like feel in. And I would start like just with that neutrality too, just like really trying to listen to your body and what she feels and what she wants to tell you. And not expecting everything right away, but giving yourself slowly that permission to even feel what you feel, whatever it might be. Like, even if there's something that like might seem really scary that you haven't really let yourself look at or you haven't really let yourself feel, to create within yourself like kind of that safe space to hold it and encounter it and to give it love. There's no part of you, I think, that you can't meet with love and that be the best way forward. But like slowly as you do that, like getting more in touch with your body, I think is a big part of healing purity culture. You do have to do this kind of like mental deconstruction too, but I don't want to neglect it in place of that kind of body work too. And yeah, just like integrating the Madonna whore inside, like what if the parts of yourself that you thought had to be whore were holy too, you know? Yeah, I think and the other thing is that I don't want to be like I love to talk and share, but I don't want to be too prescriptive for anybody. I think that listening to the individual situation is always like that's where I want to go. And curiosity, like I would meet it with curiosity, and I would encourage anybody else to meet themselves with curiosity too. Again, like rather than judgment, give yourself permission to like feel the sad things, but also to feel good and ask yourself what feels good and what feels delicious and what feels, what wakes up your senses, even if it's like, touching an amazing blanket or like lighting this certain candle or drinking this certain drink, whatever it might be that like wakes up your senses. All of these things, I think, are a part of our sensuality and that erotic energy that we can reclaim as something that's pure rather than something that is inherently degrading or shameful or dirty. It's not dirty. And like we're grown-ups and we're adults and we can learn to have a healthy and beautiful relationship to this part of ourselves.
Wow, that's so beautiful. I love that. I love that you kind of went to where I was going to go after this question, which is getting in touch with our bodies. And I think that's something that is not talked about like at all, especially in the church, because the flesh is automatically correlated with evil. And so I think it's such a disservice to Christians, and I'm really grateful that kind of some of these more Eastern ideologies and practices, I come from an Indian background, and so this is something that makes me really happy, that I've been able to reconnect with in my culture, but also see kind of integrated into Western, even Christian culture, is this idea of mindfulness and slowing down and being aware and coming back to our bodies. All of those things that I just listed, you would never hear from in a church, 10 years ago even, because it's like, oh my gosh, if I stop to think about what my body wants or what my mind wants, automatically, of course, I'm gonna, it's gonna be evil. I can't trust myself. And we even just got someone kind of giving us some feedback on the podcast, and talking about how we talk a lot about the self and how that sounds dangerous. And again, that's just recognizing kind of that black and white interpretation of the Bible, that it's our identity and everything has to be wrapped up completely in the idea of God, and that there is no separation between us and God at all. And And yet, you know, why did God create humans if, you know, there was not going to be any individuality? And for you as a mother, you know, if, even if you look at the best of parents and the best of mothers, all they want for their child is their health, their happiness, and their safety. It's like, could you truly ask for anything more from this thing that came from your body that, you know, represents you and is in your image? And in the same way, I do believe that God wants our health, our happiness, and our safety. And many times that inner wisdom that God has given to us, or whatever you believe in, you know, whatever is out there, is inside of us. And I think as long as we're afraid of what's inside of us and afraid of what we might find, then I actually don't think we can ever embody the true health, happiness, and joy that God like instilled within us. And so kind of coming back to that space of being aware of our bodies, I would add to that and say, like, what comes with that is slowing down.
Ooh, that's good. That's
and good. And it's something that it's is oh so difficult in the world that we live in, especially in America and in Western societies. And I would just really also, you know, encourage that if you want to find yourself in this season, if you want to keep nurturing the relationship you have with your body, your mind, your spirit, this kind of emerging version of yourself, the best way to find it is going to be in those moments that you are being, you know, slow, alone, by yourself. And again, that in and of itself can be really scary. So you can take it step
and
by
slowing
step.
Down.
Yes.
Yes. Slowing down in general is like, it is necessary for women too, especially if we're talking about sex and sexuality too. I think that we're so used to this, like running through like male version of what sex is supposed to be. But women need to open and like literally, and it takes time and cultivation and like you're worth the slow time that that takes. Like you are worth the indulgent, patient,
love that
play that that takes. But that's so good. I love what you're talking about, like the spark of the divine within us and as the self. And yeah, like even the, like more Eastern religions, like, you know, when we say Lord Adonai, that that word for God means like the Lord, the boss, the authority figure, like the king to whom obedience is due. But Brahman means the inmost essence in all things, right? And so this is a different conception of God, which I think that also exists in a lot of the writing in the collection of the Bible, right?
Right.
It's this, you know, because God is written about in a lot of different ways by the different authors in the books of the Bible. But this idea that there is something innately and inherently sacred within us is such a beautiful way to replace what a lot of us learned through evangelicalism, which is that like at your core, you're rotten and you need something outside of yourself to make you good and clean. If we can replace that with the belief that at our core, in our inmost essence, we are good. And yes, we can develop these like very unhealthy, like coping mechanisms, but I believe those are ways of protecting ourselves. So I believe there's something good in them too. And for me, that's so hopeful and that provides a way forward.
Oh, yeah. I love that so much. Like even in the words that you're speaking, there's so much healing. And this, you know, is why I'm so passionate about working with women, because every woman I work with, you know, both as a therapist and a coach that comes to me, has a core fundamental belief that she is not good enough, and that she is not worthy, and that she is broken, and that You know, there's just more, so much more that she needs to live up to that she can never. And it breaks my heart because I've been there, you've been there.
Yeah, you know, it makes me want to cry.
right, because it's a truly exhausting when we think about like the energy, and you were talking about like the energy of being a female, but kind of that that playfulness. I think that playfulness and that joy and that energy comes very naturally to a woman when she is confident, when she knows she's enough, when she's accepted, when she knows she's going to be safe. I mean, and I think that kind of joy and exuberance for life is what makes life worth living to men.
Yes, it is. That's the thing. Men too, like men don't want to be with somebody that has to beat them. And like, in order to have the opportunity to have a woman want you, you have to allow her to have her own wants. It's scary. That's really scary. But you cannot want what you have to want.
Right.
You cannot force somebody until you can't own somebody at the end of the day. Like even my husband, like I don't own him. And if I did, it would be really boring. You know what I mean? Like we choose each other, but we're separate people. And that's why it's still like really sexy. It's because like he's with me every day because he wants to be, not because anybody's making him or he's going to get punished if he's not with me, but because we love each other.
Right.
And we've, you know, developed this deep trust and intimacy and love and a marriage that we actually want to be in.
Wow. But well, that's beautiful.
Yeah. You have to be able to want things. So yeah, it's scary to kind of take the first step, but it's better.
Yeah. I love that because that also, when you are an autonomous individual who knows yourself, you know, as a woman who has done that work of you know, rewiring how you know how your brain works and how you view yourself and reframing those narratives and healing, and you come to the point where you realize like I like myself as I am. I think I'm pretty freaking awesome, and I'm a human, so I'm gonna make mistakes, but I bring a lot of light and energy to the world. Like when you're able to kind of come to that place and know your worth, and when you're with someone who, because I love love and I love relationships, so I'm glad we're talking about this, but when you're with someone who also knows themselves, trusts themselves, they're on the journey of trusting themselves, and they trust you. That is a beautiful recipe for success, because you cannot actually have emotional intimacy without relational trust. And that trust is not just, are you going to go and cheat on me tonight? It's, do I trust that you know yourself? And do I trust that you also allow me to be who I am? And that we both like give each other enough respect to be our own individuals and to, you know, be able to relate with one another in a way that is autonomous and yet interdependent. I think that's just a beautiful thing. And I'm so glad that you have that with your husband.
I'm very lucky. Yeah. He's great. If anybody reads the comic, they know
great. He's... I love him. So much. I'm like, is she making some of this stuff up? Because I just think,
listen, the other night, I don't know if I should tell this story, but the other night he said something. We got interrupted by our 4-year-old, and I was very frustrated.
Right.
He was like, my love, like, I'm just glad we got this time together. You know, it's not the point. This is, and I said, stop. And I said, you are fan fiction written by a woman.
This is why my comic
is not realistic.
I love it. Oh my God.
It sounds like fan fiction. So no, he's really like that. He's better than that. He's so great.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. That's wonderful. And I love hearing that, because I think in every woman's experience, not every, but many women's experience, they come to a point in their life where they just like hate all men. They're bitter. They have this black and white way of thinking. And it's like, oh my goodness, there are no good men out there. And the truth is that there are, and you know, it does take a bit of a journey to feel worthy of that and to kind of have that abundance mindset and to also see it and celebrate it. And to because I think when it doesn't do us any good to go around kind of saying no good men exist. I think that's so defeating. I would hate it if men went around and, you know, some of them do say that. And it's like, that doesn't help anyone. And it also doesn't help inspire the kind of like real confidence that I think women really do want to see in men and the good aspects of men. So again, I'm so happy you have that.
yeah, absolutely. I think like, it's like you were saying before, like it's the trust, because we've been together a long time. I'm 34 and I met him when I was 19. So we feel like we've had multiple marriages to each other. Right. So like when we were younger, there was, like periods of time where it was hard. And I see it like now from looking back, I see it as there were parts of me that felt like they needed to defend me from him. And there were parts of him that felt like they needed to defend him from me. Mm-hmm. And so it was like our two protectors would kind of get into arguments with one another. But once I kind of, again, started to realize like, no, I'm not angry at this protector who's barking at me because he's trying to protect. Barking at me is like, so I'm the one that was barking. This man hasn't yelled at me. But like, he literally has never, but you know what I mean? Like, I love the protector in you because he's taking care of inner James and my protector is taking care of inner me. But guess what? We actually like love each other. And like both of those can get to know each other too. So now I feel like on all these levels, all these different parts of him, I get to keep getting to know and he keeps to, you know more parts of me. And it's so beautiful.
I love that.
It's so beautiful. It's not like, oh, well, that invalidates everything. No, we're just learning together.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. And I love that. I'm going to be 34 in less than 2 weeks. So we're just twins.
We're literally twins. This is weird. My dad's from Michigan. Like, I didn't want to interrupt you, but what's going on? Like, it's weird, bro.
We've been connected. We've been connected through the years. I love that.
And I've just connected with you because you're just incredible. You're so lovely.
Oh, thank you.
We're friends now.
I love it. Yes, finally. I've been following you forever. But no, that's just so beautiful. And just one last thing too on your relationship, because you talk about your dating relationship in your comics. Love it. And just, you know, like you from those moments when you were teenagers and trying to navigate so many things, it comes with this communication. There's so much, obviously, in the comics, there's so much communication. You know, there's the thoughts going on in your head that you're showing. And then you're talking, you know, what you actually say to him and the, you know, the things that he says to you. I don't remember. Yeah. You don't write a lot about like what's going on in his head, 'cause you're not him, but like, you know, the things that he shares with you. And, and I think that is just so interesting because, the thoughts that go on in your head are so much of what was kind of keeping you self-protective. And he, you know, is kind of this, and you know, I know nothing about him and I'll have to learn about him more later, but he's just kind of this person that for one reason or another has a little bit, you know, maybe it's being a man, but like having a different perspective that kind of helps calm you sometimes and helps you kind of see a different perspective for yourself. Yeah. And I think that's so beautiful. And I think that's something that every woman should look for in a man. When, you know, I recently posted this thing that I didn't know was going to go so far, but it was this video about the patriarchy and somehow it got on like patriarchal men's Instagram, like men who believe in the patriarchy. And it was so interesting because there were lots of comments about like, bring back the patriarchy and like, oh my goodness, this girl is da 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 da. And it was just so interesting because I was like, I want to have a conversation with these dudes. 'Cause I, you know, in day-to-day life, I rarely have them. So you know, if you go to that reel, I'm just like asking, I'm actually asking questions because I'm like, I'm so curious, you know, what do you think about this? And and what I realized from that, at least those interactions, is that men, you know, that believe in the patriarchy, that want it, to them, of course, the definition of being a man, what they've been told in and of itself, like fundamentally, is protecting a woman, except that, you know, kind of a, one of the toxic ways that that can come out for some people, you know, is not actually protecting them. For some men, it's protecting them, but only in the like physical ways of like fighting off people. But when it comes to their own, you know, it's very weird and twisted. I don't quite understand it, but all of that all of that to say that I think, when you can find a man who is emotionally protective of you, who actually wants to protect you from the parts of yourself that are hating on yourself. I think that is gold. I think it's beautiful.
Yes, absolutely. It's So like, it's so many different things. That's just kind of, he's such an anchoring presence. We kind of say that like, I kind of like help him not be so stagnant. So we kind of like move and grow together, but he kind of keeps us anchored. He's like the roots and I'm the branches, right? But I'm 20 years old in the comic and he's 24. So he was getting his master's in like at a seminary school, but he wasn't one of the people like, I'm going to be a preacher or a pastor. He was like just uninterested in that.
Right.
He's like just very nerdy and academic. And so he's learning about the Bible from this like actual academic perspective. So he has this tolerance for the fact that it's not this literal thing. It's like these different genres, these different books written by human beings, right? And he has this deep respect for it, for what it actually is. Right. Where I'm coming from, like steeped in an incredibly different kind of world, which is this evangelical interpretation of the meaning of the Bible, which is that it has to be this literal, authoritative, black and white, kind of whispered down from on high thing. And so like, he was very like opened my eyes that I'm like, you know what you're talking about. And this isn't like throwing you, you know, this is because he just had this, he wasn't raised in the same kind of parallel universe that you and I were. So he had that, like that saw it a little bit from above. I feel like
that makes sense. That makes sense. And I love that. I think that's a beautiful hallmark and something to definitely, to look for, because I think a lot of women, when they're, you know, going through these seasons and going through this kind of undoing and unraveling, it can leave them feeling very disoriented as far as like, are there men who can really truly make me feel safe and okay and loved? And it's always just so, so great to hear people's stories. But yeah, this has been so good. I mean, we could go on and on and on. I know. And so we'll put everything in the show notes, but maybe just to wrap it up, could you tell us a little bit about just where people can find you and what you're working on right now, how people can support you? I'm just the biggest fan of your work.
You're so wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I'm on there all the time. It's God, what's my Instagram handle? Stephanie.stalvey.artist.
Yes.
I think that's I should probably know that. But yeah, I have my website that's just stephaniestalvey.com, and that has like paintings if you want to buy a print. But Patreon is a really cool place to go. I'm going to open up like a free tier where if you just want to like put in your email, I'm going to like send out stuff, but right now it's like, if you want to support me for $4 a month, you can help me buy my art supplies and you can get access to all the extra stuff.
Yes.
I'm posting like a lot of content on there that I can't post on Instagram because I'm like signed with a publisher now, but they've given me the okay to like post on Patreon. So a lot more stuff's going on there these days.
Oh, this is exciting. This is an exciting time. I know you were just on Josh Harris's podcast too. And I just hope more and more people keep hearing your message and get exposed to your energy and your light, because you have so much you know, that you're giving to the world by just being yourself and just sharing your story. I mean, seriously, like there's so much that you don't see and ever feel or hear that people like are just scrolling and seeing your stuff and experiencing a lot of freedom and a lot of permission to just love themselves and see themselves in a light that they've never seen themselves before. So I just hope you feel that all in your heart and take it with you forever. Oh, this has been so good.
Oh, you're so beautiful. Okay, well, we're just friends now. Thank you so much. I'm so like, I don't know what to say to that. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said. Thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you for your time. And thank you all for listening. Until next time.
Hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, let's continue the conversation and stay connected on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, all linked in the show notes below. Let us know your thoughts or leave a review on the podcast. Your feedback really does mean so much to us. Until next time.